There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, 107 FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Monday. And phone number, text line 343-0106, 343-0106. Also remember 9 years ago today, the Tuscaloosa tornadoes that affected places outside of Tuscaloosa as well, but 250-plus Alabamians killed on this date 9 years ago, 62 confirmed tornadoes in our state on one day. Now, state average is 65 over a year, and we had 62 confirmed tornadoes on one day, April 27th, 2011. So just a part of our discussion out there. Also, I did get some notes here that people have had some positive outcomes today with the SBA, because it was shocking, because I had the news story that the SBA, the PPP loan system, collapsed an hour after opening this morning. Maybe they got it back up. Maybe things were already in the pipeline. So I did get a few people saying that they had gotten the heads up that their loans had been approved. But you've got $350 billion out there. I wonder if it makes it through the end of the week before that taps out. I hope not. I hope every American small business that deserves it, that fits the parameters here, it gets their money. The website crashed. It shows you the demand out there. Will they have to do a supplemental part two, three, four, and when does Congress ever say no? It's questions that I still have, and we'll talk about. Also, here at home, we talked about what will be the budget process, what legislation will be done now, what will be in special session. And a good person to ask is State Senator Chris Elliott, who's joining us right now. Hey, thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me on again.
It's and actually, you pointed out that it's you're heading back to Montgomery. Can we say this? I know we were just talking during the news, but you're heading back to Montgomery today.
That's correct. I'll be in the office. The initial start back date for the legislature was supposed to be the 28th. I will be there in the office working on legislation tomorrow. They have revised the speaker and the Senate pro tem have revised the going back into the chamber date to the 4th. But as we talked about earlier, you know, you've got to get all this work done from a budget standpoint and any other legislation ahead of time. You got to make sure all your I's are dotted and T's are crossed before you actually get on the floor and try to start passing stuff. So the work continues, and frankly, it needs to continue. I mean, we need to lead from the front here. You're going to hear the governor tomorrow hopefully talk about opening things back up and getting started in that direction. And by goodness, the legislature needs to show that it's willing to do the same thing instead of sitting at home.
Well, okay. So, and you point this out, that there's, and we've talked about it a lot, that there's more than just what's done on the floor of the Senate or the floor of the House. You got to figure all this stuff out. But haven't y'all been doing that, or is that not work that way? I mean, is it done by emails and conversations and those things, even though it's not official capacity, just getting an idea where everybody's, how everybody sees different parts of the budget, or and then you meet up and you kind of flesh that out? Or how does that process actually work?
Well, it's a lot like any other, you know, decision-making process in any other business. You know, a lot of that's done through emails. We've all learned how to use WebEx and Zoom and Skype and FaceTime and all those things here recently as well. But at the end of the day, and we're getting pretty close to it, you gotta figure out how to get your colleagues all on the same page. And sometimes that has to happen in person. And I think we're getting down to the last, you know, few I's and T's, if you will, that need to be dotted and crossed. And it's time to get back to work. And again, it's time to show the people of Alabama that there is a safe way to go about business. You're going to have to change the way you go about business. You're going to have to change the way you interact. But there's a safe way to do it.
And I want to get into that and talk about some of the things we talked about last week and these ideas for, you know, how opening in different phases here in the state of Alabama. But I got to ask you back to the budget thing. You know, I obsess on this. But so you're looking at the budget for this coming fiscal year. Obviously, part of that discussion is reduced revenue coming through sales tax into the state. At the same time, there's this $1.8 billion, and y'all, I said billion, that looks to be, unless you can correct me, coming to the state, and that would go into the general fund, right? Or where does that go?
That's a very good question, and that is a topic of conversation, as you might imagine, getting a lump sum that is almost equivalent to the entire size of the general fund itself that just shows up. Now, the Treasury guidance and the bill itself that we've gotten so far really limits the expenditure of that money to deal essentially with coronavirus-related response. So it's not a just, hey, you can do whatever you want to with it. You can't, you know, go build the I-10 bridge with it, not to start that conversation again, but you get idea.
Well, yeah, but can't you, okay, but can't you do this? I don't let you get back on your train here of thought, but couldn't you say, all right, so areas, whatever, the money's coming in here through the non-federal $1.8 billion, couldn't you, oh yeah, that's right, you can't allocate inside the general fund to put money on this thing over here so you could free up the money, you know, use the $1.8 billion in some description of coronavirus response and then move the money elsewhere to pay for the things that don't fit that definition. You can't do that.
You really can't, and I mean, not to get into the earmarking conversation.
No, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
That's a whole different issue. It's very difficult to do, but I will tell you this: I think that the number of projects, or I will say, the expenditures that have taken place because of coronavirus, which is essentially what this money is for, are very, very limited. We just haven't done that much. We've stayed at home. We've lost the heck out of revenue. We've put some small businesses out of business that probably should never have been closed to begin with. But the government didn't spend a whole lot, as far as the state government goes, to combat coronavirus. And that was what this money was meant for. In all fairness, when Congress passed this, you know, you had states setting up these field hospitals in auditoriums and convention centers. You had the Army Corps of Engineers and the National Guard really going around the state trying to identify additional capacity in certain locations in the five major metro areas around the state. So the thought was that there were going to be huge expenditures associated with all those activities, and it never was really necessary. And accordingly, it's going to be a challenge. I'm sure folks will figure out a way to spend it, but it's going to be a challenge to spend it on a response that frankly never happened.
So I mean, what you're saying is there could be, the state could, y'all might be really tight on funding in the coming fiscal year for different programs because at the same time you could have money sitting there out of the $1.8 billion that couldn't be spent because it doesn't fit the definition.
That's correct. Now, the good news is I don't expect the budgets to be as tight as most people are thinking. I mean, I believe that the amount of money that came in the first half of this fiscal year, remember we started fiscal year in October,
mm-hmm.
So the first half of the year was pretty good from a revenue standpoint. And the budget projections, and we talked about this after the governor's State of the State address, you know, man, we were projecting spending a whole bunch of money. Everybody was getting a raise. You
mm-hmm.
know, it was going to be a whole bunch of money. Well, those projections have obviously come back down now. And what I think you will see happen is a flat budget that looks an awful lot like last year's budget. Because I think that even with the significant revenue that we have lost in this last month and a half, and the revenue that we probably will continue to lose for the next 2 weeks or so, while it will be a big number, I think it will largely be evened out by the very good first half of the year that we had from a revenue standpoint.
Okay, well, I'm going to save this till we get back from the break because I got a lot of questions on that. We're coming right back with State Senator Chris Elliott. Discussion of getting back to work in Montgomery, getting back to work in Alabama, and the budget process. And Scotty has a great text message. I'm going to ask this question, Scotty, when we get back, or state your comment here. 343-0106, that's the number. Thank you.
is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile on this Monday. And it is gorgeous outside. Not like it was yesterday. Get more from staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams on the way just about 12 minutes from right now. Continuing our conversation with State Senator Chris Elliott, who's getting ready to head back to Montgomery and get into work. And then the question is, when it officially takes place, you're saying you're sticking with that 28th, right? April 28th?
Well, I'll be back in the office tomorrow on the 28th, and the legislature will officially go back into session on the following Tuesday, the 4th, and get back to work. Excuse me, the following Monday, the 4th, and get back to work.
All right, I want to read this text from Scotty. It said, now, Sean, before you assume a shortage from sales tax, you need to consider the additional sales tax coming in from SSUT and online sales. So comment on that.
Certainly a very valid point. SSUT, the Simplified Seller's Use Tax, generates an ever-increasing portion of what is the sales tax makeup, if you will. You know, of course, the other part of that is the brick-and-mortar sales that occur. However, SSUT is divided up differently than regular sales tax. So regular sales tax, the brick-and-mortar sales tax, traditionally favors municipalities, and in some instances, the education trust fund, the education systems, depending on the county. SSUT is a little different. It favors the general fund and counties. Cities still get a portion of it, but it is a smaller portion than they would have received under traditional brick-and-mortar sales. That's part of an overall bigger argument and discussion that continues to go on about funding in general. But he is correct in saying that SSUT funds still are coming in at a normal rate while we see a reduction in the brick-and-mortar sales, which still make up the vast majority of sales tax figures.
What is the story here, though? We'll go circle back. So conceivably, this $1.8 billion that it's, and people are on the text line saying, it's just like you'll always say, it's a last-minute thing to save the state. But it may not be, right? I mean, number one, we don't maybe have the need, but number two, that can't just be put into pay for, it has to be specifically for response to coronavirus. So what happens if we don't find a hole for that to fit in, or will y'all get creative?
I am infinitely confident in politicians' ability to get creative and find a way to spend money. that is not something I doubt. Okay. But I will tell you, they're going to have to get really creative, because the way the law is written currently is pretty narrow. Now, the question really becomes, so who gets to spend it? You asked before the break, where does it go? Mm-hmm. Does it go to the general fund? There is an argument going on really between the legislature and the governor's office right now as to whether or not she has exclusive control of almost $2 billion to decide where it goes.
You mean the executive branch would get to say, like by fiat, yes, this department gets that department gets this?
That is what the governor's office is currently contending. Ooh. And obviously, I take issue with that. I think that this needs to go through the appropriations process and have some oversight, as opposed to one person deciding where $2 billion in spending goes. And if you look at it from a national level, imagine the hundreds of billions of dollars that would be in the hands of just 50 governors. I just don't think that's something the Treasury is going to allow, or that those state legislatures across the state are going to allow. That money of that nature needs to go through the appropriations process, just as it would for anything else.
You're just going to wait for another update from the Treasury Department? Is it not that simple? I don't want to say simple, because it's not, but is that what we're waiting on, to hear if the Treasury Department, or if it stays there, is there anything that y'all can do as the legislature to compel the executive branch to hand over some of the piloting of this?
Sure, you can pass a law, and you can, you know, there are methods that you can use to make sure that you clearly define what the process is for money such as that. And that's, you know, that's something to be worked out. Your question about waiting on Treasury, you know, the law passed, it's 800 and some odd pages. You got to go through that. It references a whole bunch of different code sections that then reference other code sections. You got to dissect all of that. Then you have additional Treasury guidance that came out late last week that is currently being digested and trying to see and read into that guidance what is and is not allowable. And again, I think you'll still have additional guidance coming from Treasury as municipalities struggle with and local governments struggle with lost revenues, how that money can and cannot be spent. And I also think that there are a lot of folks advocating on the national level for additional stimulus money. I know the trillions and trillions we've spent already doesn't seem to be enough, but additional stimulus money for cities and counties and even states. And there's starting, I think, fortunately, to be some pushback on that. It goes back to, have you adequately managed your state finances, your city finances, your county finances so far? Do you have a reserve fund, et cetera? I mean, I'm pleased to say that Alabama, under some pretty conservative leadership, has rainy day funds, reserve funds, rolling reserve funds, things of that nature that exist for things like this. Now, some of our cities and counties are going to have a little bit more problem with that, but I hope that the stimulus money that's already been passed is sufficient for that without the need for another large-scale stimulus package coming down from the feds.
Yeah, when Mitch McConnell last week talked about some states declaring bankruptcy, I started getting real nervous here that, this will be used to bail out pension plans or something else, bad decisions made by other states.
Well, and that's my concern as well. I mean, there has to at some point be an end to this federal spending. Some of this has been a very good idea. Some of it we have seen has an awful lot of fat on it. And I think any more than what we've got right now is probably headed in the wrong direction.
Ben's asking here on the text line, if a business had to close due to the statewide stay-at-home order, then couldn't the state use that money for those businesses, saying it's part of the COVID-19 recovery?
Great question. The federal statute specifically excludes any lost revenues for reimbursement for lost revenues. So unfortunately, the answer is no. I think that would be the best place to spend this money, is helping out those people that, frankly, the state has harmed by closing their business. And I wish that that was the case. That's just something that is specifically excluded in the federal law.
All right, and then I had questions about the beaches, because you had mentioned it before. If the governor tomorrow would take some of the suggestions y'all made in that 150-some-odd page document that came out, it would involve a two-tiered beach opening, right?
That was the recommendation that was made by the Lieutenant Governor's Task Force, which I was fortunate to serve on. And I think that from what I heard from the governor this morning and the state health officer this morning, that her orders and the state health officer's orders that are going to come out tomorrow are going to have a timetable and time frame for an opening and a reopening. I think some of the restrictions are going to be relaxed initially. Of course, this is all supposition, but it's fairly educated supposition, that those small businesses that have been closed down kind of arbitrarily, right? You can buy a couch from Walmart, but you can't go to the furniture store and buy a couch.
Yeah.
I think those are going to be relaxed. And I think you're going to see a little bit more parity among retailers. I think you'll see the stay-at-home order relaxed, except for it will remain in place for folks that are at risk. So if you're, if you've got an underlying health condition or underlying, pulmonary issue, if you are, over a certain age, then you probably need to, stay at home and not risk it right now. But let the rest of the economy get back to work. Beaches are still, one of those things that I would say up in the air, and I think we're still lobbying on that, whether that's opening on the 1st or a little bit later in May. The good news is I think we have made the argument and convinced folks, and I will give a lot of credit to the mayors of Dolphin Island and Orange Beach and Gulf Shores for helping me do this, but we have convinced folks that we can do this safely. We can enforce social distancing on the beach, and that walking on the beach is no different than walking down the sidewalk, which we're allowing people to do. Standing in your front yard, which just happens to be sandy and happens to join the Gulf of Mexico, is no different than you standing in your front yard that's grassy and, comes up to the next to the road or the sidewalk. And I think we've made that argument that we can reopen the beaches, we can do so in a safe manner, and I think I hope to see the governor echo that tomorrow.
It's a simplistic view and an erroneous one as well, that it's, you know, it's all, if the beaches are open, it's beach blanket bingo, or it's, you know, MTV's Club La Vila beach party. You know, there's a lot of people that use the beach by themselves, are socially distant by themselves. The person fishing ground mullet right now doesn't want anybody near them. They're going to be out there by themselves.
Exactly. And I think that there is a misunderstanding of how our beaches work, frankly. And that's even from folks within our own states. Look, we see the pictures on social media and on the news, some of which have proven to be wildly inaccurate, of all of these folks piled up at the beach, this, you know, uncontrollable, you know, spring break type crowd. That's just not what we're anticipating at all. What we're anticipating is folks slowly coming back. People are still very conscious about social distancing. They are to some extent, you know, still a little concerned and fearful, which they should be. That's going to work in the favor of keeping the spread of this down. And they're going to continue to social distance. But again, no reason to shut the whole thing down when you can open it back up and not really have any public health consequences. Now, there is one concern that has some merit, and this is something we're going to have to work on and we're going to have to watch really hard. And that is, our beach economy is based on visitors coming here. Mm-hmm. It's based on not Sean and Chris going to the beach. It's based on folks from Iowa and Nashville and, yes, Louisiana, coming to our beaches. And that is something we're going to have to watch closely, that we're going to have to test for, and that we're going to have to make sure we don't have a problem with as we move forward.
Yes. State Senator Chris Elliott, thank you for your time. We'll check back with you. I know you're heading to Montgomery, so I'll be wanting to talk to you once you get back in the office up there.
Sounds good. Call anytime.
All right, will do. Coming right back, more of Midday Mobile. One of our buddies who's putting together a group here in town to help people who make stuff right here in Mobile. You're talking about local business. Mike Callahan joins us here in a couple minutes. Plus, we'll check in with Dr. Bill for the forecast, and news is next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Monday. Don, I answered your question there on the text line, but it might be worth answering here on the air as well. And I'm not going to say I'm an expert on this, but the way I understand it, well, okay, Don said, if I come out, should I say where? Don, you turn everybody on to where I'd like to go. Don says, if I come out to the west end of Dolphin Island, y'all don't want to go out there. It's a joke. He said, if I come out to the west end of Dolphin Island by boat and get out of my boat and walk to the beach, am I breaking the law? Don, the way I understand it, and there's enough folks that are in the know on all these things that listen to this show, which I really appreciate those folks as well. They can correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I understand it, you are. Like, it's, you know, I started asking this question. This is what they don't understand in Montgomery, because I started asking early on. I said, okay, well, what if I'm standing on the first sandbar? You know, if I come by boat and anchor up, that would be fine. But the second you break the high tide line, then and then I said, well, what if it's at low tide? So, Don, the way I understand it, what I have been told at this point, even if you came by boat, you anchored up and you walked into the beach, once you're on the beach, you're breaking the stay-at-home order or the closure of the beach. But hopefully that will be just a memory here soon. Well, 10:30 tomorrow, the press conference with Governor Ivey, and hopefully she'll lay out some more clarity on that as well. I mentioned our buddy Mike Callahan would be joining us and telling us about a new project here. And I was telling Mike during the commercial break, you just made my life very easy each Christmas when I start assembling my locals only Christmas list for folks around here, because you got a brand new website out to feature stuff made right here at home in Mobile. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean, top of the afternoon. How are you, sir?
And the remainder of the day to you. So, madeinmobileal.com. Talk about it.
Sure. It's, as I was telling you a little earlier, because of the quarantine, home working, and fortunately, thank you, and started making stuff out of, I love making pallet wood stuff. My daughter has an entire, you know, furniture ensemble based on this, but started making pallet flags. And after four or five pallet flags, my wife said, well, that's kind of cool, but what are you going to do with them? I went, I don't know, sell them maybe, give them away. So, and then in talking about how local artists, and because of arts and crafts shows, once they are coming back, will the buyers come back to those shows? So I just see these local artisans, whether it's a candle maker or a salsa maker or, you know, paintings or woodworking or, you know, crafts, are they going to be able to sell this stuff? And I said, well, a lot of people like it. A lot of people want to, but to buy an e-commerce site, even if you get an inexpensive one, is pretty darn expensive for somebody that's making, you know, birdhouses in their workshop.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, I'll go ahead and do it. Put it out there, and we charge a nominal fee. Basically, it's on a monthly basis. You don't have to sign a long-term contract. And you can pay $29 a month plus a 6% per transaction. Now, that 6% breaks out to, for the credit card fee, which is what I'm 3% on the credit card charge, because that's what the credit card people charge me. And then 3% to pass to get the paperwork lined up and get it sent out to you and all that kind of cool stuff. So we're actively looking for area artisans. So if you make stuff that is, and the only stipulation is it's got to be made in Mobile.
Okay.
That's the rules.
So, I mean, if whatever their local craft is, what they make, then they get in touch with you, and you're gonna put the, it's gonna be on the website. People are gonna be able to come see it, see what it looks like, click and buy there.
Exactly. Now, if you go to the site right now, because we want to get it populated with artisans first. So when you go to maidenmobileal.com, you'll see a nice site, and it'll just basically tell you what the process is, how it works, what will happen. Once we get enough artisans in place, then we will open up the e-commerce side of it, where people can then go online and go, hey, I like pallet flags. So there'll be a category for woodworking. So you can go through and see all the artisans that create things out of wood or candles or salsa or whatever their local product may be. And then you can buy them online. You whip out the old credit card. A lot of online shopping going on, obviously, right now. And then we will forward that information to the artisan. They will package it, ship it, get it to you, and boom, we're helping support buy local, you know, and supporting local artists.
Now, how will it be different, the delivery methods on this? Will it be pick up at the shop, you know, looking down the road, will they pick up from somebody's shop, or will they have it delivered? How's that going to work?
It can go either way. We'll leave that up to the individual artisan. There's a nice lady named Marriott Kennedy who makes a great salsa who we're working with. She delivers. Some people, if it's artwork or candles or stuff like that, they may ship. We'll let that individual artisan to figure out, you know, what works best. If you're close, it's like with the shirts that I do. If you're close enough, yeah, I'll drop them off to you. If you're a little further away, we'll ship them to you. So the buyer and the seller will then figure out what's the best way to coordinate that shipping, whether it's a drop-off or a ship product. No touch, of course.
Right. And so right now, what you're looking for are the artisans, the people to populate the site. So they go there and just click and say, hey, Mike, I do this. I make this, and you go from there.
Absolutely. And they have emails on there. It's madeinmobileal@gmail.com. And just send me a little, you know, thing. Hey, here's a picture of the birdhouses that I make, and then we'll, you know, everything else is up there on the website. And so right now we're just actively looking for, you know, craftsmen and artisans and woodworkers and people that make things by hand. You know, seamstresses, they make the cute little girl outfits with the embroidery name on it and all this nice stuff. And those are the kind of folks that we want to help support. That they make a nice product, everybody in the family or the neighborhood loves it, but they can't quite spend the money to build a full-blown e-commerce site.
All right. Once again, y'all check it out. So it's madeinmobileal.com, madeinmobileal.com, right?
That is correct, sir. And send us an email. We'll get right back to you. Like I said, all the details are on the page, so there's nothing hidden, sneaky, or tricky. It's just a flat monthly fee, and you don't have to sign up for 6 months or 12. You want to do it for 2 months on and 2 months off and then come back, that's fine too. We're happy to help.
All right, I put the link up on my Twitter feed, and y'all are on social media too with this, right?
Absolutely, on Twitter at maidenmobileal, and on Instagram it's the same, maidenmobileal. You can find us everywhere. All the social media links are on the website as well.
All right. Appreciate your time, and best of luck. Let us know how it's going. And if I figured out, if I could be handy or creative, I'd bring something to you. But I don't have anything like that. So,
well, you could send one of those good-looking bass that you caught over the weekend. I don't know.
I don't know if that's
dry ice.
I don't know if catching bass is an artisan thing. Maybe I just send some picture.
Well, the bass was made in Mobile. So, kind of so. If not, well, send me one. I'll test it out. I'll let you know how it works, and then we'll proceed accordingly.
Okay. Good deal, Mike. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean.
All right. So there you go. MadeInMobileAL.com. Check that out, or you can get the link from my Twitter feed at FMTalk1065. You know, I was thinking about this on the online sales tax portion of our conversation we had earlier with Senator Chris Elliott, and how that is it's helping during this, as a lot of people are buying things online, even like Mike talked about local businesses, that revenue coming in, it's not, even though you're not getting it at a brick and mortar store, it's still coming in. But one of the nuances of that is that's better for counties and worse for municipalities. It's better for a municipality in percentage to get it at the brick and mortar. It's not as good online for the city as it is for a county. It's kind of a weird way they work that law. All right, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And seeing a couple stories pop up now about, well, we've talked about this for month or so at some degree on this show about do you see advantage for one candidate over another in the runoffs coming up in July with this, what's going to be a low turnout. I mean, runoff elections already have a lower turnout than the primary. So you have a primary runoff, you have a lower turnout. And then in amongst all this, I rarely go out on a limb and tell you, because I've learned enough over my decades that as soon as you think something is the way it's going to be, it'll be completely different. But in this one, I'm telling you, it's going to be a very low turnout coming July in the primary runoff. But I saw the story pop up just about an hour ago. Well, does this advantage Jeff Sessions? Well, that's one thing we've talked about here on this. And also here locally in the AL1 race, does it advantage Jerry Carl in the AL1 Republican primary over Bill Hightower, or vice versa? We'll have, by the way, to ask those questions, I got Jeff Sessions coming on Thursday, and Mobile County Commissioner and candidate for AL1 in the Republican primary, Jerry Carl, is going to join us tomorrow. He has a story up over at Yellowhammer. You can read ahead that Jerry Carl has called for the Attorney General to file a lawsuit against China. A letter released today, Jerry Carl's called on Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall to sue China for Alabama citizens' loss of life, human suffering, and economic turmoil. So Carl has written, "With the deepest respect, I call upon your office to join other states within our country in bringing litigation against the Chinese government for seeking damages for Alabama citizens' loss of life, human suffering, and economic turmoil, which has devastated our state, our country, due to the Chinese government's purposeful misinformation related to the coronavirus." Talk to him about that coming up tomorrow. It's the same thing, though. I mean, I'll ask him the same kind of questions I ask Jeff Sessions. You can call the Chinese out, and I agree with you. I agree with you. But how are you ever going to extract a pound of flesh? Chinese are going to say, "Oh yeah, you're right. Sorry, here's some payment for doing that, or we'll just get rid of some of the debt we hold." It's not going to happen. It may bring other countries to side with you or something like that. But expecting the Chinese to go, you got me. Oh, you got me. This time, we were going to try to play fast and loose with the rules, but this time he got me. I don't know. I just, Scotty, thank you. And it sounds like Scotty, he has got this stuff figured out, so I appreciate his text here. He said there's more to it. He's talking about the online sales tax issue. He says the SSUT is a flat 8%, so in places like Mobile, the city takes a hit, but the county comes out ahead. State gets 4% of the 4%. The other 4% is split between the cities and counties based on population. So, yeah, the online sales tax, which still, Scotty, help me, the way I understood it, they printed a list, right? Remember? They printed a list of, like, the online retailers that were under this, and it was, like, some people that had brick-and-mortar. Of course, if they were going to have any kind of brick-and-mortar presence in the state, they had to pay the tax. But then there were a bunch of, like, unlisted other people, like, I guess there's still some, maybe there's still some online retailers not taking the money in. Maybe that's the situation. But right now, obviously, the state is, thank goodness they did that for their revenue. But the other part of it, if you didn't hear what Senator Elliott was saying earlier, this is the mind bender. This is the new piece of information to me. So $1.8 billion in federal money coming to the state of Alabama through the CARES Act. But, yes, that defil, he lives in detail town, doesn't he? And the detail is that $1.8 billion has to be spent on coronavirus response. Now, I guess it can be used in arrears to pay the state back, but there hasn't been that much spending by the state in coronavirus response. But the state may see shortfalls in revenue coming in. But that's not a response. This is what happens when the federal government is trying to react and get ahead of something, and you've seen, thank goodness something is being done, but the response, if you have $1.8 billion coming to the state. Now, we can argue, believe me, and I'd join your side if you want to argue about the just complete loss of fiscal responsibility that's gone on in our republic, but it's been going on a long time. But we get $1.8 billion here, and we can't use that to solve the prison issue. Can't solve whatever funding issue, whether you're somebody like me that thinks it needs to be in the general fund, or if you're somebody who thinks, oh, it's got to be ETF with it. But you can't do it on either. So there'll be, yes, they will get creative in Montgomery in figuring out, just like they did with the BP money. Oh, well, this is an economic thing, or this is an environmental thing when it's really economic. But $1.8 billion is going to come. And the question is, too, will Governor Ivey, we'll talk about a press conference in a second, will Governor Ivey be the sole delegator of that, or will the legislature move a law to put it in the hands of the legislature, which I don't know which one's out of the frying pan into the fire there. They're both going to be tough. But what if there's $1.8 billion sitting in an account, but we don't have in Alabama the response to, we don't have the receipts for response, but we have need for it over here in the budget somewhere else, and we can't use it. That will be an interesting situation. Interesting. So I don't know what the final, somebody said, how much do we owe China? I don't know. What's up, Dalton? Do we know the number? What we owe China? I think it's like 7% of our 7% of our debt, something like that.
Yeah, I think it's around.
Here, I got to flip these on there. I had those off. There you go.
I want to say 5 or 6 trillion, but I'm not sure about that.
Amongst friends.
Five or six when you're already down 22?
Yeah, double up to catch up. And yeah, we're going to spend another 5 trillion here in this. So, but yeah, do you think the Chinese will say, yeah, you got us. You got us. We're going to wipe that debt free.
Not seeing that happen.
Just go, you got us this time. Okay. We're just, here it is. I'm taking the big eraser, one of those big, not even the eraser on a pencil, the mm-hmm. big parallelogram-shaped eraser, and then we're going to erase that debt. There you go. You're good.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. The bigger pivot I could see is using this as something to turn to bringing manufacturing back to the United States, more of the things that we've exported out to, or more of the, jobs we've exported.
This is going to build consensus. I agree, but
they're not going to just.
Not going to say, "Well, here's your check. We were wrong."
No way. They're going to fight that tooth and nail.
They're not going to do anything. They're going to say, "Come get it, big boy."
Yeah, and then you have all these pitfalls you have to navigate. Like I saw that the EU was putting out a report saying how China and Russia have tried to change the storyline of this entire virus, and even the EU, they had pressure put on them from China to change that report. From the initial report that was seen by some news sites, after China got involved, the EU went softer on China in this report. So there's going to be all kinds of grandstanding going on.
Yep, coming your way. Just wait. You probably won't have to wait long for that. Aiden says 1.5, and maybe we say 1.5 billion. I think it's 1.8 billion, but what's billions when we're amongst friends? 1.8 billion. So we'd buy a lot of test kits. Aiden, until I'm corrected, I don't think the state could spend the money even on test kits, because is that Maybe it could. Maybe you could say that's a response to coronavirus. We're buying text. You may be right, Aiden. I don't know. It's because they're still, as always, waiting for more advisement from Treasury. Maybe you could, but it would be, maybe that's somewhere that you could use the money for some test kits for all Alabamians. But then what are you going to do with the rest of the $1.8 billion? And the state would be looking at that and not being able to apply it to the budget. We'll talk more about this, I'm sure, coming up in the next days and weeks. Tomorrow, it is Governor Ivey, 10:30, and we'll be recapping it on this show, Governor Ivey and the presser there to talk about the state's opening or timeline for opening as she lays that out tomorrow at 10:30, and we'll recap it here during Midday Mobile. All right, Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next. Remember, FMTalk1065.com. Check us out also Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Dalton. I'll see you tomorrow morning at 6 for Mobile Mornings.